Good evening. We'd like to resume our regular session. I say resume because we actually began the session earlier. We exited to executive session and are coming back into regular session. I'd like to welcome each of you to our council meeting this evening. We appreciate your interest in the community and in particular items that may be on the agenda this evening, but we appreciate your interest. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Mayor Winfield.
Here.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Pena.
Here.
Councilmember Rodman. Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Stormwater Utility Commission meeting that was scheduled for February 20th has been canceled. The Board of Adjustment meeting that was originally scheduled for February 25th has also been canceled. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will be having a special session on February 25th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Then the Historic Preservation Commission will be meeting on March 2nd at 5 p.m. also in the Council Chambers. Then the next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting will be on March 3rd at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the next Town Council regular session, which will be followed by a study session, will be held on March 4th at 6 p.m. right here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy has a spotlight on youth this evening.
I certainly do. Come down. Good evening. It's my honor to introduce to you Sebastian Colondres. Did I get it right? Okay. Sebastian is a junior at Basis Oral Valley, and he's kept busy with his academics, his love for drama, and being part of the Oral Valley Youth Advisory Council. Sebastian has an outstanding academic record, and his teachers have only wonderful things to say about him. His AP physics teacher states he is excellent academically and daily uses his insights to help his classmates with difficult concepts. His drama teacher told a story about how he rallied his students backstage before their Christmas Carol show entirely on his own. He brought everyone into a huddle and led them in a few warm-up chants to get energized and pumped for the show. In addition to focusing on his school academics and clubs, Sebastian has managed to find time to achieve the rank of Eagle Scout. In just 1 year with the Youth Advisory Council, he has become an asset by helping create events and bringing energy to all their community activities. His outgoing positive energy will brighten any situation, and I understand you're a dancer. At least you loved it. Okay. It is clear that this young man is an exceptional student and citizen. Sebastian, we're so proud to recognize you as our spotlight on youth, and we can't wait to see what your future holds.
homeroom.
And his homeroom.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones Ivy and Sebastian. We appreciate you being here this evening along with your family and friends. Ms. Jacobs will present her report at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of Council. Just a few items tonight that I wanted to mention. The first one is we certainly appreciate our community's patience right outside our doors here with the Naranja Drive and La Cañada signal adjustments that we're doing. I do want to alert the community that we will be extending that through Friday in order to make the final changes. And for those who don't know what changes we're making, right, what we will be doing is changing the left arrow to a protected left arrow north-southbound, and that's really designed for public safety. I want to give a shout out to our internal traffic safety committee. This is an internal group that is across disciplines, and they get together and they talk about issues from a perspective other than just engineering, police and planning and a variety of other things, and this was their recommendation and we're moving forward with it. So thanks to our traffic safety committee. Also today we finally started, after much waiting, the access point into the Safeway Plaza on Tangerine Road, and that we believe will be a significant improvement to the number of lefts that people make out of the down by Woodburn Drive. So this access point will be on Tangerine and it should be completed in about a month, so we're very happy about that. Also, if our residents have not yet participated in the Parks and Recreation Master Plan Needs Assessment and would like to provide input, they can find that information and a direct link on our website. We would welcome that input. We've had great participation so far, and we really appreciate the thoughtful comments that we've gotten from our community thus far. And then finally, the town is in the process of designing a brand new website. Sometimes you have to refresh things, and so we've gone with a vendor, and we now have a beta website that's about at the 30% level. And it's not often that you get to actually contribute to whether or not the way that our website is going to be designed is going to be useful. So starting today, we've opened that up for a few days for our residents to play around in our beta test site for a little bit and to give us feedback. There's a specific survey question right at the top that will stay open until February 23rd, so our residents can tell us how are we doing and what are some of the things that we need to make sure in the final analysis are included in our website. We want this to be really a great experience for our residents, and we look forward to their input. And that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs, for your report. The agenda will remain as posted. Mr. Standish, there are no blue cards. Is that my...
That's correct. No blue cards.
Thank you. We'll go to the presentations part of our agenda. Mr. Standish, the first presentation.
Presentation regarding the retirement of K-9 Bruno and the introduction of new K-9 Isu.
you have any drugs, now's the time to
Victor 1-4-6.
Victor 1-4-6.
1-5-6. Canaan Bruno will be 10-42 for his final time. Here you go, buddy.
Temper unit standby for a this transmission is for Canaan Bruno. He has just finished his last shift on duty and is now headed for retirement. Thank you for your 7 years of service. Thank you for all your hard work and for making sure your handler got home safe every night. After helping the thieves close to $1 million in narcotics, you deserve some much-earned belly rubs. You can now chase rabbits instead of bad guys. The office of the department will miss you. Enjoy your retirement, Victor 156-2.
Thank you very much. I'll be 10:42.
Have a good night. Bye, Bruno.
Thank you.
Good
job, buddy.
Oh, it's our new guy. here he is.
I'm excited.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Officer Reynolds. This is K-9 Isu. He's the newest member of our K-9 team here at Oro Valley Police Department. Isu is an 18-month-old Belgian Malinois. He came from the Netherlands. He is trained and certified in narcotics detection and patrol tactics. And he was wonderfully donated to us by Miss Lisa Bayless. Lisa, come on up.
Oh.
Him and Lisa are already friends.
Yeah.
I promise.
Lisa, sit. So he's a little excited. This is his first public appearance, and he's got to learn his manners a little bit better these days. He is a big hugger. He loves everybody, so he's very social, which is wonderful for us because we do a lot of public demonstrations and so forth. You know, we like to interact with the community, and we like to, I don't want to say show off, but we like to show off for you guys. So, but this is Isu, and... thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate this opportunity to work this guy. Chief Sharp, I appreciate the opportunity as well. A lot of you guys don't know, this is my third K-9 here. I've been very fortunate to work for the department that I work for this town. And I've been very fortunate to work with the people that I do that have made me such a success. The video you just saw, that didn't happen without the other members of this department and our fellow agencies and so forth. So thank you to all those folks, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing such a great job, and we love the dog. And, you know, I can personally tell you, because I come across people all the time who are moving to Oro Valley, and one of the reasons that they move here is because it is a safe town. And obviously the OVPD and its newest member play a large role in that. So it helps us all. So thank you so much. Thank you.
So
So you know this is live town council because I believe Councilmember Pena was going to give a brief overview to introduce this. And
yes, my apologies. And no, it's fine. So thank you. One of the things that we wanted to introduce was the retirement of Bruno. We realize the canines hold a special place in OVPD. And so in understanding what happens post-retirement, the canines, they experience a lot, possibly a lot of health problems because of the activity that they go through. It's been explained to us that they're high-octane athletes. And so post-retirement, they have a lot of health issues at times, and so the handlers have to endure those costs. They're not paid for once they retire. And so a canine retirement program was created. And if anybody's interested in donating, it's handled through the Oral Valley Optimist Youth Services Fund. And it specifically helps the retirement costs for these animals. And it is audited through our Oral Valley Police Department so that all those funds go specifically to the health care of our retired canines. And so speaking of Bruno, Bruno is home enjoying watching Isu come home after a hard day's work, right?
But he's
adjusting well. And some of the things that people don't know is that because these dogs, they're special dogs, they're with these handlers all the time, they can't go to households that like yours or mine. So the handlers end up keeping them, which Officer Reynolds, you'll be keeping Bruno. Correct. And so it's a wonderful thing that we get to do this for our Oro Valley Police Department. So, and Lisa, thank you, because the monies that you've provided to purchase these dogs, that's money then that can be used in other areas of the Oro Valley Police Department. So wonderful community effort, Lisa, and thank you. So, thank you.
We'll let Isu make an exit. Nice. Thank you, Lisa. Mr. Standish, the second presentation.
Recognition of outgoing board and commission members.
Okay, so I believe for this I'm going to come down below. Each year we recognize outgoing board and commission members. Our boards and commissions serve an important role in our community. This is another way for community involvement in terms of these individuals give of their time and their expertise in particular areas, Board of Adjustment, Historic Preservation Commission, Planning and Zoning Commission, Water Utility. There's also Stormwater Utility Commission. But this evening, we'd like to recognize the following individuals who have completed their terms of service. And I'd like to invite Mike Shepik, who's completed, to come forward to receive his plaque from the Board of Adjustment. A group photo? Okay, so don't go far, Mike. Where would you like us? I'd like to invite Grant Kalasunas, who will be accepting the plaque in behalf of his belated wife, Susan Kalasunas, who served on the Historic Preservation Commission. Grant.
Thank you.
officer.
This is harder than I thought.
Yeah. No, it is.
Sorry, folks.
We love you. So, you know, Susan, I'll just, I met Susan at the Hot Cocoa Run a year ago this January. My wife and I ran with Susan and, of course, others, but I'd met Grant earlier. You'll see Grant around town taking photographs as a volunteer in Parks and Recreation, and he does a wonderful service for the community, and Susan was a wonderful woman, and we're so sorry, Grant, for your loss. Thank you. You have our condolences.
I know that Susan and I talked about it as volunteers, and the town of Oro Valley, to be a volunteer, it's an honor and a privilege to serve you. And you, and we don't need to be served. Let us take care of you.
Thank you.
Smile, Grant.
I'd like to invite Robert Swope, who served on the Planning and Zoning Commission, also served as chair. So I'd like to invite Thomas Gribb, also served on the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then Ann Campbell, who served on the Water Utility Commission. That we'd like to recognize. They may be here this evening, and so if you are, we certainly invite you to come forward. C. Kent Russell served on the Municipal Property Corporation. Thomas Vetrano also served on the Municipal Property Corporation, and Donald Taylor served on the Municipal Property Corporation. Are you Donald? And then we believe these individuals are not here this evening. Charles Kill served on the Budget and Finance Commission, Ellen Geyer, Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, and Nathan Baskin, Planning and Zoning Commission. So we want to thank these individuals for their service. And then if you'd all like to come forward, we'll take a group photo.
There you go.
Let me turn it back on for you. There you go.
If you could read the third item.
Sure. Recognition of Police Chief Danny Sharp for his service to the town of Oro Valley.
So I'd like to invite the town manager to come down, and Chief, if we could invite you to come down as well. As you know, our good chief submitted his resignation to retire September, that's when I retired, February 21st. And so tonight we have a special recognition, and we'll also provide an opportunity for council members to also speak. But Chief, in behalf of the Office of the Mayor, whoops. Thank you. I'd like to read the following proclamation and present to you. And I've got to take off my glasses to do that. Whereas Daniel G. Sharp, Oro Valley Police Chief since 2000, has served the town of Oro Valley and its residents for more than 20 years, and whereas during his tenure, the town of Oro Valley has earned such accolades as safest city in Arizona and best place in Arizona to raise kids, and whereas during his tenure, Chief Sharp was named recipient of the 2014 Stannard Baker Award for Outstanding Lifetime Contributions to Highway Safety and the 2013 Greater Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce Legacy Award, and whereas Chief Sharp served as the chairman of the Arizona Automobile Theft Authority Board and the first ever International Association of Chiefs of Police Chairman of the Highway Safety Committee from a municipal agency, and whereas under his leadership, the Oro Valley Police Department in 2017 led the region and state in passing a hands-free, distracted driving ordinance to reduce the number of motorists who are killed or injured as a result of distracted driving. And whereas during his tenure, the Oro Valley Police Department implemented community programs like Adopt a Business, Community Assistance Program, GALS, Start Your Engines, and Self-Defense Awareness and Fight Education, setting Oro Valley's police services apart from other organizations. And whereas during his tenure, the Oro Valley Police Department Citizens Volunteer Assistance Program has grown to more than 100 participants who donate thousands of hours of time to extend the town's public safety. And whereas from June 2016 to September 2017, Chief Sharp served as the interim town manager. And whereas Chief Sharp co-founded Project Graduation, ensuring that for the past 15 years, more than 13,000 graduating seniors from the Amphitheater High School, Canyon del Oro High School, and Ironwood Ridge High School have been kept in a safe and sober environment on graduation night. And whereas Chief Sharp is leaving a legacy of full-service community policing that will ensure Oro Valley remains a community of excellence and one of the safest towns in the country. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oro Valley, Arizona, do hereby proclaim that Daniel G. Sharp is hereby recognized for his honorable service and contributions to the Town of Oro Valley and to its residents with many thanks from a grateful community. Dated this, the 19th day of February, 2020.
But wait, Chief, there's more. So just so the community understands, we actually have kind of a party plan for the Chief tomorrow. So hence why these chambers aren't full tonight, because tomorrow they're going to be packed to the gills. So, but this is the Chief's last official town council meeting as the Chief of Police, and it was fitting to honor him accordingly.
with some things that maybe, you know, we could plaster plaques. You're going to get enough of those, Chief. But one thing that, you know, one thing that the Chief isn't necessarily going to get, and I think that I have the authority to give to you, is an official, believe it or not, we have an official key to the town, okay? And this key to the town says the town of Oro Valley, and this is really, Chief, a memento to you that all that you have done in this community during your tenure, there aren't very many people who get to have this key to the town, and it's a reminder to you that you have the key to our heart in the town, and that you have a key to the community, and that that really we it's a small token, but it doesn't take wall space, so you can maybe, you know, use it as a paperweight. And most importantly, this key and about $5 will get you a really great cup of coffee at Starbucks. So anyway, Chief, like I said, there's more to be said tomorrow. But tonight, I personally wanted to honor you for all of the support that you've given me as the town manager over my past 2.5 years, your mentorship, and for the great job that you have done in your 20 years. So we wish you the best, and we know we're going to see you often.
I'd like to invite the council, as our town manager said, this will be Chief Sharp's at least official last town council meeting, and I'd like to provide an opportunity for council to give their well wishes this evening as part of our meeting. Councilmember Pena, we'll start on your...
Okay. Chief Sharp, there's a lot of things that I could say. We've had a 21-year friendship and working relationship, and it's been one that I treasure. So as a from a personal standpoint, I want to thank you for the person that you are. From the town standpoint, the culture that's been built with your leadership is, I would say, probably unprecedented in a lot of ways. The thing that I see is leadership throughout the agency that shows amongst each other, and it shows to our citizens that benefit from that. I'm getting a little choked up, so I'm going to have to stop. It goes without saying that morale starts at the top, and you exemplify that. There's a lot of things that our town doesn't know that goes on with the police department. The types of crimes that our agency deals with, we don't know because you as a leader and on down through the agency, you make it seamless for us not to know. But your innovative policing that's carried out, it shows because we're the safest city. And I compliment you for always being ahead of the game. Your leadership, the leadership of your agency, and now our new chief that I know will carry that on, it's going to continue. And so we're safe in so many ways, not just speeding because we supposedly give a lot of tickets, but in many other ways, from our babies all the way up to our seniors. So I just want to say thank you, and I'm glad you're going to be around. I certainly hope that you're going to be a lot more visible than what we maybe think you'll be when you're going to be traveling around and whatnot. But when you come back, we're going to be here, and we're going to hope you're going to be here. So thank you, Chief, for all your years of service.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes. Chief Sharp, I just want to thank you from the depths of my heart. I've been only here for almost 4 years, but I remember when I first got here, and I remember the kindness of the officers that I'd wave at every morning. I remember feeling safe in this community. So when I look at that chart and I see Oral Valley ranked safest city in Arizona, I now understand why. Because of your leadership, your dedication, and your hard work to have one of the best police forces that I've ever, ever lived with. And I've lived in a few cities in my lifetime. And I know that that's going to be hard to beat. But thank you. Congratulations on your retirement. And there is life after retirement. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barron.
Thank you. I view public safety as sort of the bottom layer of a pyramid upon which we can build a wonderful community where we can be friends with one another, where we can experience parks and recreation that we feel safe at, shopping in commercial areas we feel safe at, our homes and neighborhoods that we feel safe walking our pets, allowing our children to go out and play. And that is all the foundation of a really wonderful community, and also our schools and the critical safety that's there in those schools. And so I just see that as something that seamlessly weaves throughout our community. And so many people joke, well, there's no crime in Oro Valley and things like that. And, you know, first of all, I know now that that's definitely not the case. You know, there are crimes that thankfully that the public is able to move on from because they get taken care of so rapidly that they don't have to be something that we're consciously thinking about all the time. And that's so important for our citizens to have that level of safety where we can almost take it for granted. And yet we have to be conscious to not take that for granted. And so thank you for everything that you've done. As we were commenting on the way in here, things don't just happen. We don't just become that way. It happens because of 20 years of leadership that you've provided to the department and all the other amazing men and women who have served with you and all that they've provided as well. So thank you very much. You'll be missed, and we feel confident that the department is being left in good hands and appreciate all you've done to help prepare Chief Riley. Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
I've known Danny long before. I was on council through mutual friends at Tucson Police Department, where he was originally from. And it's amazed me as to what an unassuming and humble individual he has been the entire time, and always so quick to come in and help answer questions for the town. And you'd never know that he's this nationally recognized chief of police who, the best way to say it is, we export expertise from our little town and our small police department to the rest of the nation. We have literally people, police chiefs and commands there from all over the country, and in some cases from the world, coming to Chief Sharp and his department asking about programs that he has helped implement and how do they bring those to their own community. And yet you'd never know that from talking to him. He's just this regular guy who might live down the street. There's been so many things he's done in his career. There's two things I'll mention. One was briefly mentioned already. Was it 17 years ago, a new resident, Mary Snyder, who had moved from California, had worked on a concept out in California called Project Graduation. That was this program where the concept was, instead of losing high school graduates to drunk driving accidents and other things on the night of graduation, which was something that was unfortunately fairly routine, is why not create a safe place for them to all come where there's no alcohol, and we know that at the end of the night they're going to go home safe to their families and be able to continue their great life that they have ahead of themselves. And that was because by creating this amazing environment actually at the school that is hard to describe unless you have seen it, where the students actually want to go there. They choose to go there. And Mary Snyder came in to sit down and talk to the chief of police, and I remember relating a story about, you know, I'm going in to see the chief. I've never met him before. I don't know how he's going to respond to this. I'm going to try to sell him this program. And Danny sat there and listened to her, and as soon as she was done, he said, I'm 100% in. You got 100% backing on this. And that's what Danny and the police department has done from day one and made this such an amazing program for our youth. The second thing is Danny's leaving us actually with a gift. And this is, I think, the most amazing thing of all is when he was hired to be police chief, there was no one within the Oro Valley Police Department that was trained or capable enough to take over that position. So the town had to look elsewhere. Fortunately, they found Danny. And shortly after coming here, he made a commitment to the mayor, council, and the community saying, I will ensure throughout my time here that we have a well-trained, highly experienced staff and police officers that could be available to move in to the command position and the chief of police position so that there'd be continuity, so that people that knew the programs, formed the programs, implemented the programs would be available. And he held to that promise. We had an amazing number of highly qualified police officers that were ready, willing, and able to apply for and take over the chief of police position. And these are people who, if any of you were at the promotion ceremony today, would have demonstrated when our new chief, Kara Riley, is bringing up these officers for promotion. This is one officer who's this big hulking guy, and she's talking about, I knew him when he was 16 years old and made sure he went in the right direction. We had representatives from the Tucson Airport Authority, Pima County Sheriff's Department, Sara Rita, DPS, FBI, City of Tucson. I mean, all these people know Kara and our command staff, and they know them. So this amazing network that has occurred, and also with Golden Ranch. That's one of the main contributions to why things work so well up here in Oro Valley. And the fact that we have this amazing command staff, and frankly, like as was mentioned, all the way down to the patrol officers are so dedicated here. And as stated too, is it comes from the top. You can't have great morale if the leadership isn't instilling it. You can't have great innovation if the leadership isn't behind it and helping to go through. You can't have great training if the leadership is not making it a priority, sending our command staff to the FBI schools, investing money in sending them to training programs, having them serve on SWAT teams or with the DEA. So this is the gift that we're left with. We have an amazing department, and as Danny summed it up to some folks, like, it's a good time to leave. I feel good about the police department and the future of this town. It's in good hands, and I think that's one of his greatest legacies. We know we can go to bed at night and know that on Monday morning we're going to be just as safe as we were the day before when Danny was the police chief, and now that we have Chief Riley in place with our command staffs and offices. So, Danny, thank you so much for just, I mean, taking to heart this town, like, not just all our police staff, but most, pretty much our town staff. They take ownership in this town. They love this community. You've loved the community. And the work that you've done has shown that, and it's a much better place now than before you got here. So thank you so much. We're really going to miss you.
Chief, I want to congratulate you on your retirement and express appreciation for your dedicated service to our community this past 20 years, to the profession of law enforcement for 40 years, your leadership here locally, nationally, and internationally is certainly recognized by many individuals, and we have been very fortunate to have you at the helm of our police department. As I've had the opportunity to attend a variety of different events, whether that's at the Aquatic Center or Tohono O'Toole or a ribbon cutting of a new business, one of the common threads of those experiences is the expression that people have made, unsolicited, but a common thread has been their recognition of the degree of just feeling of safety that they have in our community. Businesses that have intentionally come to Oro Valley because of the reputation for public safety. Individuals who have moved to the town because they've done their research and they've discovered what Councilmember Jones-Ivy referred to up here on the wall, and this has drawn them to our community. And you've said it, community policing is foundational, public safety is foundational. It is our brand, it's everything. And so much of what we enjoy, and as Councilmember Pena, is sometimes easily taken for granted. And so thank you so much for making this community a place that we all enjoy as a result of, as a product of that public safety. The other thing that I think sometimes is missed is the human element. And I remember last year at one of the events where we were recognizing volunteers, and I was speaking to a gentleman who had recently lost his wife, and he told me just how what a significant loss that was to him. And that he was just on the verge of depression, or probably was experiencing depression. Somehow he got connected to being able to volunteer for the police department, and that just, you could just tell that that was a turning point in this person's life. Just that opportunity to serve, to associate with other individuals, made such a huge difference. And I think that's a story that is sometimes missed and is representative of your successes in these various programs that have touched individuals in our community as a whole. So thank you, Chief. We'd like to continue with our agenda. We have the consent agenda. Someone would like to make a motion?
I move to approve consent agenda items A through F.
Second.
Okay, so all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, thank you. Consent agenda passes, 7-1. We'll go to the regular agenda now. First item, Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action on resolution number R20-07, proposing a permanent adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation for the town of Oro Valley.
Okay, and I believe we have a staff report.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Staff is here tonight asking for council consideration of a resolution proposing a permanent base adjustment. Some background for this: the Arizona Constitution and Arizona Revised Statute do impose an expenditure limitation on every city and town, county in the state. And the way it works is they take the baseline expenditures from 1979-80, and that becomes your base limit. And then the base limit is adjusted by the State Economic Estimates Commission's for a standard inflation rate and a population growth factor. So the town of Oro Valley had a 79-80 base of $272,000, and our current expenditure limitation for fiscal year 1920 is an expenditure limitation of $25.7 million. And the way the math on it works is you take the $272,000 limit from 1979-80, you adjust it for the inflation adjustment, which is a 300% increase since 1980, and then a population adjustment, which is a 3,000% increase. And that you do the multiplication there of those three numbers, and you get our state imposed limit for 1920 of $25.7 million. There are certain revenue or expenditures from revenues that are excluded from your expenditure limitation. So any expenditures from bond proceeds, interest income, grants, or intergovernmental revenue, those expenditures are excludable from your expenditure base. And so staff estimates for the fiscal year that we would have approximately $14.3 million of exclusions from those revenue categories. And so what does that mean? Our expenditure limitation of $25 million plus the $14 million in exclusions, we estimate that our expenditure limitation for the current fiscal year that we're in would be about $40.1 million. Our current budget is $111 million. So without home rule, which we are currently on, that's the expenditure, the alternative expenditure limitation that we're on currently, but if we did not have that, the town would be approximately $61 million over the state imposed expenditure limitation. So what are some of the reasons that the state imposed limitation doesn't work here in Oro Valley? The main item is really the makeup of the community back in 1979-80. There was very little retail activity in the town at the time. And we've really grown as a destination for the resident or the retail and commercial activity. So adding retail businesses is not factored into that formula that the state has. They only adjust it for population and inflation. So if you add significant commercial or retail areas to your tax base, that is not factored into the state imposed limitation. So fortunately, the state did include four different options for an alternative expenditure limitation. What staff is recommending tonight is the permanent base adjustment option. So the permanent base adjustment is a one-time approval by the voters. It does have a reduction of election cost and staff time every 4 years from going through those elections. That may be offset by some increased cost in reporting under the permanent base adjustment option, but it also provides stability to service levels. It gives us that stability going forward that we don't have to go to an election every 4 years, that once this is adopted, it's a permanent adjustment and would not have to go back to the voters. We did run this through the Budget and Finance Commission, so the town manager requested the BFC to review the state-imposed expenditure limitation and make a recommendation to council. They did review that at their November, December, and January meetings, and the Budget and Finance Commission recommended forwarding the permanent base adjustment option to council for your consideration, and that was consistent with staff's recommendation. The BFC recommended an adjustment of the 79 base limit to $1.65 million. The resolution before you tonight is recommending an adjustment to $1.4 million. That was staff's original recommendation to the Budget and Finance Commission. They were seeking some additional flexibility and so recommended an increase to the $1.65 million. But I'll just go through the math here on the two different adjustments. So with a $1.4 million or an adjustment to $1.4 million, staff projects that when we do the inflation adjustment and the population adjustment in the next year, that our state-imposed limit for 2021 would be $137 million. Our current budget's 111. We're projecting it may grow to 115 million. So we would have excess capacity of about $22 million or about 20% over our budget if we go with an adjustment to $1.4 million. If you want to take the Budget and Finance Commission's recommendation to go to an adjustment of $1.6 million, It would give us a state-imposed limit of $162 million, or about 42% excess capacity. As far as the calendar, we did have a study session with council back in January. We are here in February asking for council to consider the resolution. Staff will prepare. There is several documents that have to be prepared and submitted to the Auditor General's office. So staff will be, if council adopts this tonight, staff would be preparing that information and submitting it to the Auditor General's office in the March to April timeframe. Print the publicity pamphlet in June, and then the primary election would be in August. So with that, staff recommends council adopt resolution number R20-07, proposing a permanent base adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation be submitted to the voters of the town. There are some alternative motions in the staff report. If you want to go with the Budget and Finance Commission's recommendation, we would ask you to identify that in the motion. Staff is available for any questions that council may have.
Okay. So council, there's a couple options here. I mean, we can have present a motion and followed by discussion, or we can have discussion and then a motion. Vice Mayor Barrett?
I think we should probably move forward with a motion, just since that's what the rules of procedure say, and I'd be happy to provide a motion.
Sure.
Okay, I move to approve resolution R20-07, proposing a permanent adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation of the town and amending the expenditure base adjustment amount to $1,377,683.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, discussion? Councilmember Solomon?
Just so the public understands, what happens is the state legislature, in their wisdom, has decided that municipalities and towns can't be trusted to have their own budgets and run their own programs, so they implemented this state law that said you towns are limited to spend X amount of money based on this original date. And if any of you were following this, you saw how completely out of whack those numbers are with reality. So luckily, there was an exception to this state legislated mandated budget limits, which is about one-third of the actual cost to operate this town, and that is that every 4 years, the town goes forth to the voters, and the voters get to approve or disapprove of what's called home rule, which basically says, we trust our town to run the programs they need to run and expend the money they need to expend and collect the sales taxes they collect, so on and so forth. The difficulty with that is twofold. One is you have to do it every 4 years, but more importantly, if for some reason, because of misinformation, that ballot measure fails, your town is decimated. That means from that point, and this has happened in at least one community, for 2 years, we would be limited to spending approximately $44 million as opposed to the $111 million it takes to run the community. It would have to be an immediate cut of everything. And some people say, well, we could manage to fudge here and there for the first year, but certainly not the second year. So the community would basically cease to exist as you knew it until the ballot measure could be brought back to the voters. Voters wouldn't get a second chance in 6 months when they realized that, oh my gosh, we made a horrible mistake. So what this does is it allows it to go to the voters just once and readjust the base so that now you're not under the concern of having to live under the state mandated regulations, which were kind of ill-placed to begin with. So that's all that is happening here. It'll go to the voters. The town by law cannot advocate for or against the ballot measure, but what the town will do, we'll put out the educational material explaining what this is, and if it is approved, it helps solve a problem created by the state legislature years ago. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Councilmember Jones Ivey, then Councilmember Pena, and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes, let me understand something. If this goes to the ballot and it is not voted for by the community, then are we still under home rule that we voted on the voters voted on last year?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Jones Ivey, if it did not if the permanent base adjustment did not pass, we would still be on home rule for another 2 years,
okay,
and then would be able to go back for either a home rule election likely or a permanent base adjustment again in 2 years.
Okay. My second question is, what kind of public education is going to take place to ensure this passes? Because I understand what did home rule, what was the, what did it pass by, 2,000 votes last year?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones Ivey, no, it was about a 75% pass rate.
Okay.
So it was very 75 to 80% pass rate.
Okay.
And what we would do, just very briefly, is we would absolutely develop a very robust both outreach and education campaign. That would be, you know, we would use all of the vehicles that we can, from, you know, showing up presentations and all of our usual community. We'd develop a whole communication strategy for it,
mm-hmm,
and have our internal speakers bureau and that sort of thing. And just as a reminder, the town staff and the town council, once, if the council moves to put this on the ballot, our only ability is to educate. We are not permitted by state law to advocate for a yay or a nay vote.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Pena.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, Councilmember Jones Ivey, you asked the question about educating our community, so thank you. That covered some of what I had a question about with that. So whatever messaging or preparation to educate the community, is the council going to be made aware of that process beforehand and or during the process?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, we can certainly do that. We want you to also be as well informed about all of our key messaging and that sort of thing, because you will also help in the process of educating our residents where it's appropriate.
Great. Okay, thank you. I'm in support of this. I think just based on, while I think you mentioned it was a $15,000 cost savings that we'll save each time this goes out to the public for vote, that's still $15,000 that we save. And I think the efficiency of the process is also good, because it's my understanding it's very time consuming for the staff. So I think we are working on lean processes, and I think that definitely falls into that category. So I support this. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barron.
Thank you. I agree with what has been said, and I also support it because I think that it provides some stability to the town. When we have to expend resources every 4 years going out to educate the public, that's sort of a cyclical level of resources, and it's difficult to maintain that steady staffing and hours and things like that if something's being done every 4 years. Whereas with this permanent base adjustment, it'll provide that stability to the town. So any extra amount of time that might be required for the reporting could be done on a steadier basis through the years. So I think I see that as an advantage, that there's a little more stability and steadiness moving forward. And I think it's important for our residents to understand that this is not a question about taxes, that this doesn't do anything to increase or decrease taxes in any way. It's also not really a question about government spending, because in terms of setting the budgets and setting the spending, you know, that's being done by council. So if, for example, as was mentioned, if the home rule were not to pass, then we would lose about 60%, am I correct, of our services. And I think that's a level to which our citizens would not be willing to move forward with that, with the quality of the roads and public safety and parks that would just be decimated. So I think that this is a good move for us to move forward, to provide that stability and to understand that it's not a tax increase in any way
or anything like that. It's more of a reporting thing and how we deal with the state, because home rule has passed in Oro Valley. Every time it's gone to the ballot, it's more a question of just us having to take the time to educate all the voters about what it is, why it's essential that it passes, and then it has passed. So thanks.
Thank you. So I'm also in favor of the permanent base adjustment that was recommended by the Budget and Finance Commission. I am in favor of the town's recommendation in terms of that adjustment level. And I believe that because staff will be charged with a significant effort in terms of the public outreach, public education, that that by following their recommendation just helps to ensure that that they'll be able to accomplish that in terms of based on the work that they've done that has been supplemented by the Budget and Finance Commission. I understand that that additional adjustment would increase the flexibility, the budget capacity, but I believe that what the town or what the staff has recommended provides us with that flexibility. I also believe that that there are some opportunities to increase that, as was mentioned, the revenue exclusions that the staff estimated about $14.3 million, that would add some additional capacity if needed. The others, in the unlikely event that the town were to either annex a large commercial area that may push our budget higher than anticipated, or revenue higher than anticipated, that we could revisit the budget or this adjustment in the future if needed, but it seems unlikely. Councilmember Nicholson, you've joined us late. I don't know if you've been following the conversation, but we have a motion on the table, Councilmember Nicholson. It's the motion, the suggested motion to approve resolution number R20-07, proposing a permanent adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation of the town. Do you have any questions or?
Just really a comment, really. I think our voters are really intelligent, and I think they'd continue voting for it, but it's kind of like a Brexit. Like, if for some reason it doesn't happen, I think it's pretty catastrophic if it doesn't get passed. And I think there's ways around it, but I think it's a good insurance policy just to pass something, try and get it passed in the next election cycle. And then, you know, if it doesn't pass for whatever reason, then at least nothing bad happens in that situation. So I'm for it.
So just to clarify for Councilmember Nicholson's benefit, the pending motion is the alternative motion.
No, it's the suggested motion, wasn't it?
Sorry, I think I read the alternative.
So that's what I want to clarify. So there's no confusion. The motion that Vice Mayor Barrett made that was seconded was the alternative motion by which this resolution in your packet would be adopted, but instead of the number 1.127683 being passed, it would be the 1,377,683. That's what the motion was. That's what the actual language was of the motion, and that's what was seconded. So, if there's any confusion or if there was any mistake made, that needs to be clarified.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, yes. I move to amend my motion to the suggested motion, which is I move to approve resolution number R20-07, proposing a permanent adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation of the town. And thank you to our attorney.
I'll agree as second.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
So just for our record, what happened there, that was a voluntary amendment that the original second person who seconded that motion agreed to adopt that voluntary amendment. So that's where we are. So we have the,
thank you.
The motion that was seconded is now the resolution in your packet as stated.
Okay.
It is.
Any discussion? Okay, so all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes resolution number R20-7, proposing an adjustment to the 1979-80 base expenditure limitation of the town. Okay. Second item, Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action on resolution number R20-08, adopting the 2019-2029 land use assumptions and infrastructure improvement plans dated December 19th, 2019 for the town of Oro Valley.
And there's a staff report.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, not really.
We're turning it off and on. How about now?
That's better.
I'm going to get a little closer. How's that?
It's better. It's a little better.
Okay. All right, so last month on January 8th, staff as well as our consultant, Tischler Bice, presented the land use assumptions and our infrastructure improvement plans. During that public hearing, and since then, we've received no public comment. Tonight, we are here for council to consider approving just those land use assumptions, so LUA, and the infrastructure improvement plans, so the IIP. Basically, what the LUA is, those are projections, our population, densities, and then the IIP consists of projects or facilities, if you will, that are going to be expanded and may be considered for an impact fee. Just for transparency purposes, January 8th, council gave us several action items as staff. We have followed up with council members, but just for our public here, our viewing public, just want to give an update on some of those action items. One was from Vice Mayor Barrett to make sure the PowerPoint presentation was placed on the town's website. That happened on January 9th. There was also some questions from Councilmember Rodman just regarding our outreach efforts. It was mentioned that we've been reaching out to various stakeholders, MPA, Saba, Tucson, the Greater Oro Valley Chamber. Between just some of those entities, they are reaching out to approximately 2,500 members. Some have admitted at this point of the game, their members are not very interested. They're going to be interested in the second phase. We'll get to that in just a minute. And then also there was lots of discussion. So we'll present here. It's kind of small. Or at least I'm thinking I need to start wearing glasses. But there were some questions as far as the Arizona fee comparison. Councilmember Rodman, as well as Pena, asked about Sahuarita. We did confirm that Sahuarita does not collect any impact fees. They have development agreements in place, so that is why they don't collect a fee. There was also some impact fees related to water that was missing, so we apologize for that. That was for Marana and Tucson. Those have been included. I would encourage, though, to council that we not really focus on the development fees because we'll be bringing that back, but just the LUA and IIP, and we'll bring this comparison back in April. So next steps, right now we're here today to, again, just approve the LUA, IIP, and then we have a second item after this. If council approves, we'll be coming back on April 1st, and that's not April Fool's, but we will come back for a public hearing on the development fees. Council at that time will not be taking any action. It's just to get your feedback, get feedback from the stakeholders. We'll also kind of get that between now and April 1st, and when we publish the new fees. And then you'll see in May, we'll bring that back to council for consideration of adoption. And with that, Mr. Mayor, members of council, we hope that you will consider approving this, and the impact fee team is ready to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. So similar to item one, item two, if we could have a motion and then a second, and then we'll have discussion.
Well, I'll move, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'll move to adopt resolution R20-08, adopting a 2019 to 2029 land use assumptions and infrastructure improvement plans dated December 19th, 2019 for the town of Oro Valley.
Second.
Okay, discussion. Council Member Solomon.
impact fees are an item dear to my heart. I'm very sensitive to those and the effect they have on the cost of housing and development and doing business in the community. They're highly regulated by state statute to ensure that they're not misused or abused in any way. A lot of time and effort goes into the details of the report, which, by the way, if you want to get a brain freeze, this is it, and it's almost all detailed numbers and analysis. And I know I've gone through it several times, and I've asked staff some very pointed, detailed questions. Staff has been very good on producing this report and covering all the items, and they were very good on responding to and answering some very fine details to make sure that we were on the right track and things weren't being misallocated. So I'm at the point, as I made the motion of supporting all this background information on it. There's a second component to this, and that is the council will actually have a chance later on to determine what the fee should be set to, and I think there's various factors that go into that. But this is the basis on how they're computed, what components go into it, how do we keep our roads, our police, our water system, and everything up to the necessary levels to provide for the projected increased capacities that will be needed due to residential, commercial, retail growth and traffic, so on and so forth. So I wanted to thank staff for the work on it. It's a very long, detailed process, and I think they've done a great job, and they certainly know the details of what they've done and able to show the rationale behind it. So I wanted to thank them for that. And as I said, I'll be in favor of passing this.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I just had a couple of questions. Since we're being asked to consider this as a council, I was wondering if the staff could clarify what legal discretion we have in terms of these land use assumptions and the ILP. Because it was my understanding that the report had to be done by a third-party consultant, and that is what was done. So, and that, you know, that there's certain laws among which impact fees must reside within these reasonable ranges based on certain things. And so I guess my question is, what discretion is there on the part of the council, and what is it exactly that we're being asked to evaluate or do, or is it simply by law, sort of it has to come through council, and so it does?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, the latter. It has to come through the council for good reason. These are significant fees that are a major policy discussion. The reason why you're being asked to approve the land use assumptions and the infrastructure improvement plan is to basically validate the growth projections that are included in there, which, again, we really look at past growth and projected growth, and it sets the foundation. And then also validate those infrastructure items that staff has identified that would be required as a result of new growth. We can go into any of the detail. I think the whole purpose of it is really, like I said, validation more than it is to get into the weeds. But there certainly are opportunities, and I've having gone through this a number of times in my career, where it's, well, are we really going to need this XYZ piece of infrastructure during that time? But it is a 10-year plan, and it's a what-if plan. If we grow at the rate that we project, we would collect, once fees were established, this amount of money that could only go towards these things. And so it's a documentation of a commitment on the part of council to say, if we collect those fees, we commit that they will only be spent in this way for these items. So that's really the policy decision on the part of council. When we get to the conversation on April 1st regarding the impact fees, there are further policy issues that the council has for consideration, namely regarding, adopting this means that you agree to the methodology in which we've identified that we expect growth to happen and infrastructure needed in order to support that growth. So that's kind of step one. The fees are then based on that methodology, and those will come forward to you in another manner. And there are communities that choose not to charge 100% of the maximum allowable fees. Now, that's what the town of Oro Valley has previously approved, is 100%. But the council is certainly able to consider options on something less than 100%. But with the understanding that, whatever that difference would be is something that would have to be made up from another fund source. And that is something that other communities have done. And should that be, we can walk through those issues down the road. But so I hope I've answered your question about, kind of that validation of this very detailed methodology. And yes, our firm, Tischler Bice, has done this many, many times, and their methodology is solid. And they work with us on questions that we may have and ensure that what we are doing meets the letter of the law.
Okay, thanks. And then my second question is just, I'm wondering if you could explain a little bit more on our fiscal impact. It talks about how the combined total of the fees would be approximately 1% higher for residential uses, approximately 48% higher for retail commercial, and 11% decrease for office, industrial, and warehouse uses. I'm wondering if you could just briefly get at what the key things are that have caused the retail and commercial to be so much higher than the other fees, because I would say that high of a jump is a little concerning to me in a sector that we're trying to bring into Oro Valley. Okay. So if I could just understand a little better.
Absolutely.
Yes, Mayor and Vice Mayor. One of the big changes, Mr. Bice at the last meeting went into a little more detail on this, is the parks fee. In previous study was not allocated to any of the non-residential. And so he believes that this state law requires that the park fee be allocated to both residential and non-residential. And so that's approximately $550 of the increase to the retail and commercial. There's also an increase on the transportation side for the retail and commercial, and we went back and looked at the prior year or the prior study that was done back in 2014, and there's just some different methodologies that were taken between the current vendor or the current consultant that we used versus the prior one. And when you looked at the non-residential in the prior study, they actually went down significantly from the study previous to that. So we believe that based on the vehicle mile trips and everything that's in the study, that it is an appropriate fee for the retail and the commercial. We've looked at that several times, tried to see to make sure that the calculation and the analysis was correct, and we do believe that it is.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
That was essentially my question, too, about the 48% increase for retail commercial, given that we're trying to maintain that in our community. You said something about mile use or something. What was it that you said?
It's
how we got to the 48%.
Well, there, part of the calculation in the transportation is the vehicle trips, and that's
the vehicle trips to and from the retail business.
Correct.
And does that impact what, the highways, or
that impacts the transportation fee? And so there was, if you look at it, the retail and commercial went up, but some of the other categories in the non-residential went down. Okay. So the office and warehousing. So it's just it was a reallocation of the vehicle trips with the new consultant. They used a different model.
And if I may jump in, Mr. Mayor, yes. Councilmember Jones Ivy, there is a this consultant has very, very consistently used data tables on per square foot for different uses in order to make those calculations. And so if you think about it from the perspective of how many trips would a doctor's office generate in terms of vehicle trips versus a Walmart, right? And so basically what we found is that the calculations that were made in the last study really were not appropriately factored. They were there was more of the trip generation being applied to the non-residential uses that were lower in intensity, and so theirs went appropriately down, and the ones that really do generate those trips and therefore have the bigger impact on our roads went up. And so as hard as it is to take, we do want to ensure that the methodology is justifiable and that it's done fairly and across the board. And I do feel that, you know, retail does generate, hands down, the most impact on our roadways, and it is their responsibility for our new retail buildings to pay their fair share for that impact on our roads. And that's really what impact fees are all about, is proportionate share of infrastructure that's needed as a result of new growth.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Pena.
This question is for Ms. Jacobs, Town Manager Jacobs. Sorry, Amanda. So when I was looking at this, it says the projections are for a 10-year period for the service area. So if they're for a 10-year period and we have to look at the impact fees for, we have to look at the impact fees every 5 years, how does that factor in? So when the next 5 years comes around and this is a 10-year, are we saying that these fees, potential fees that are going to be predicated on this particular report, are they not going to go up? Are they going to be reevaluated and then potentially go up again because there's a 10-year period for the projection? So how
Thank
is that
you.
Working?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, we are required to do a 10-year projection and a 10-year infrastructure improvement plan, but we're also required to do a minimum reevaluation of every 5 years. So we recalibrate. Were our estimates correct in terms of the cost that we projected? Did they go up? Did we grow faster? Did we grow slower? All of those will have an impact, and that's why we recalibrate. So, for example, if the town were to annex a large undeveloped area, we did not include any prospective annexation areas in this analysis, but I would budget for an update sooner than the 5 years because we didn't take into consideration the infrastructure that would be required for those new areas or the growth that would be in those new areas. And so we would want to recalibrate those to make sure that the impact fees being charged are still fair. And that's really what this is about, is a fairness perspective. So it is a, you know, it's one of those we review and recalibrate, and then we readjust at those points, which is why there's a required study. And most often, you're not going to see huge changes, and I think in our case, we didn't really see huge changes, but one major change that we're seeing in terms of where those, you know, you might see things go up more in one area, down in another. You know, we're getting kind of to the end of our arterial road infrastructure that needs to be done. So we saw a reduction in that transportation. On the other hand, we saw an increase in our parks and recreation fees. And so that's exactly what happens. We build it, we go back, we calculate it, and then we recalculate on what's needed in the future. In the meantime, everyone who's paid along the way, their impact fees are banked in each of these separate accounts, and then we use those resources in order to pay for that infrastructure.
So if with this land use assumption report, is it just for, is it taken into consideration build out for the town? Because you mentioned that it's not for any further annexation, so this is strictly for build out.
It does. That's correct.
Okay. And I think Vice Mayor Barrett's one that brought it up about looking at the competition, but also how does this work if we're trying to be able to compete, right? So there is a discretionary element in these fees, right, that
Mr.
would
Mayor,
be available?
Councilmember Pena, absolutely there is a discretionary element in the fees, but the discretion, I would say, has some bumpers on the part
right.
of the state legislature, so that, yes, there can be a discretion, but it can't be by a particular category. It has to be across the board. So
okay.
if there wanted to be a, we're only going to collect 90% of the parks and recreation fee, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
That applies not only to all of the non-residential, but to all of the residential as well. So it has to be that fairness
mm-hmm.
issue across the board. But yes, there absolutely is discretion on the part of council.
Okay. I don't want us to get backed into a corner where we put this or we start to move forward with this, and these are fees that are cemented in, and we don't have the ability from a competitive standpoint, because we're not in the position that some of our other municipalities are to be able to grow. And how do we compete, right? Because the impact fees are what they are. Would a builder or stakeholder decide to go somewhere else? Because, you know, if we're comparable to another town, right, and there's just a little bit of space or difference, how is that going to work for us? And I know that Mr. Johnson's been working really hard about bringing in various companies. So I just want to make sure that we're not boxing ourselves in too, and that, you know, I think it's good that we're going to be able to speak to stakeholders and get more input. I like that process, because at the end of the day, this process, I think November 2020 is when we absolutely have to have this done. And so it doesn't have a fiscal impact to this current year's budget anyways. So for us to take the time and make sure that we're doing the whole process and working with stakeholders and finding out the information, I think it's going to bode well for us. Even if we have to do the homework and get very close to the timeline that we have, at least we know we have reached out and done that homework, especially given we know we're kind of landlocked right now, and just kind of the holistic picture.
Sure.
Given that we're not going to have an impact on the current year's budget anyways.
Right.
So.
And Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, we have reached out fairly significantly to stakeholders. We've had several stakeholder meetings in person. They've reached out to their memberships. We will continue to do so, because there will be another public hearing that will come before the council in April. So, and all of that, of course, is something that we can consider. The one thing that we have the comparison information for you that you requested on the single family homes, but we didn't do the comparison on the non-residential. And so we'll reach out also to our comparable, you know, our competition, of course, is right here in the region for the most part. But we'll find out what other communities are doing that, you know, gives us at least a bellwether on where we are. You know, it's going to be different based on, I mean, you heard Mr. Bice say, you know, it's hard to compare because every community is different. You know, some communities really put a huge emphasis on recreational amenities and they charge accordingly for it. And so those are those things that we can do. The other thing that the council can do is we can take out amenities from the calculation and not, you know, decide that we're not going to charge those to new growth or those fair share items to new growth. All of those are comparable. I mean, all of those are options. They just have ramifications to them, which is we just have to fund them in another way. But I do think that it'll be useful to have that information, and we'll be happy to prepare that for you before our next meeting.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Nicholson.
Let's go back to the analysis between the other cities and towns. A little bit's rhetorical. So I know our water fee, $6,000, it's about 2 to 3 times most other places, but I would just want to say we're uphill So I think other citizens will see that it's really high compared to everyone else, but Peter might add to that. But, you know, the pumping stations, we have one more pumping stations than the other places around us are lower downhill. And the other one was the police fee. It's obviously one of the lowest there in the comparison to everyone else, but I imagine it's because we built a new evidence facility, and that probably relieves us of a lot of strain of having to build stuff in the future. Any comments on?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, some of the other communities also are doing a buy-in approach for brand new police stations. And so they've made that investment, and then they're collecting impact fees toward their fair share of, you know, if it has, say, a 20-year shelf life, then they can do a buy-in of the new residents' fair share of that 20-year. And our only new facility that we have is our evidence facility. And so our fee is lower because that's more of a $6 million facility versus a $25, $30, or $50 million in the other. So, you know, again, it's all proportional, and it's all based on making sure that new growth doesn't pay for more than their fair share of what is essentially the responsibility of the entire community. So that evidence facility doesn't just serve new growth, it serves our existing residents as well. So we have to deduct out of that calculation how much of this facility is for our existing residents. And so we did kind of an estimate. Well, you know, that's this percentage. That means we've got this much capacity left, and we project those. So they're only paying just their fair share, which is why that number is much smaller. But again, as you mentioned, for water, in this calculation, we also have the Northwest Recharge and Recovery infrastructure that's coming in. So we utilize and plan to utilize more CAP water in the future. And again, new growth will pay for its fair share, and existing growth will pay for its fair share as well. So that's part of the reason why our water fee is higher than some.
And just for me personally, I know we compete with Marana and Tucson, people in this region, but kind of what Rhonda and Melanie were also saying, like, we compete for employers that come here, and, you know, obviously different states are having way different type of fees, but maybe even just Tempe, Chandler, Gilbert, Scottsdale would be good for future councils to have those on there to be, are we competitive in the whole state or just our region? But it's nice to see that we're kind of in the middle. We're less than Marana, so yeah, us. But, and then, you know, we're a little bit more in Tucson, but we're right there in the middle. No, not egregiously high or low. It seems like we're pretty competitive in the middle, so.
Okay, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, thanks. So just to clarify, at this point, is there any discretion for council to say we would like the retail and commercial to be a lower percentage, and let's say we'd like to shift that towards residential or something like that? Is there any discretion to do anything like that, or no, there's no discretion to do that?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, we can't shift what is residential's responsibility to non-residential. So the only thing that the council can do is express to us that seems a little high, and we can come back to you with some alternatives as to what that would look like and what the ramifications would look like. And I will say that your approval tonight simply keeps us moving on the process, but it does not mean that you can't still make some tweaks to it. So we hear what you're saying tonight, and we'll go back and ask those questions again and be prepared to share with you what are the ramifications of doing that where we still meet the requirements of state law. And that's our constraint. And it's tough, but I think as Mr. Art said, what we saw was that 10 years ago, those fees were higher, and then for whatever reason, they went down. I think our perspective, not having been here, is that that was probably an error, and we're needing to fix that error. And it's a tough nut, you know, for 1 year, and maybe we can discuss what some of those mitigation measures could be, but we do still have to have a justifiable methodology with which to make those assessments.
Okay, that was my understanding, and so thank you for just kind of clarifying that. I'm not in favor of us, you know, collecting lower than what we need to collect for our infrastructure improvement plans, because the general plan that was approved by the voters speaks loudly that new growth needs to pay its own way, and that's really all through the general plan. And so that really comes into play here as well. So that's why I'm just looking, I'm wondering if there's any way to change that balance. And what I'm hearing you say is that there's not. And so that answers my question, and I'll be ready to vote. Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon?
A few items. First, it's my understanding that if this is approved tonight, these are the numbers we would have to deal with. I wasn't aware we could actually still go back and tweak them or change them. I thought once we approve this, the calculations that were used are pretty much set in stone.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, anything that the council adopts is never set in stone, because it's
okay.
It's something that the council adopts, and there's always an opportunity to make some amendments. Now, what process would be, we'd have to go back and see if it pushes things out or if we have a little bit of ability to make some. I believe, because we have made changes, for example, the council has made amendments to the infrastructure improvement plan in the past, and that's simply a council resolution item. And I believe that even on the IIP, we can simply do amendments, and it doesn't trigger that whole start of the process again. And so that's my understanding. We will go back and clarify that with our consultant to make sure. But, not to say that there wouldn't be some ripple effects potentially, but we'll, like I said, we'll go back and reevaluate. But there are opportunities to amend the IIP for sure. And so we can even reduce things out of the IIP in order to reduce the amount that gets charged. Those are all potentially doable things. But we'll come back with you and get you some more detailed information on process once we've confirmed with our expert in the area.
Then would it best for us to just delay adoption of this if we want to look at it a little bit more as opposed to adopting it in its current form?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, staff recommends that you take action on this on the schedule, because the timetable is so tight and all of the steps that we have to do are so tight, and we are required to do this in a fashion that meets the state law. I believe we can work with the concerns of the council while still adopting the general overall methodology. What you are essentially validating this evening is the methodology, and you are expressing concerns about the impact of that methodology. But the best way to deal with that may be to look at the actual fees that are charged rather than changing. We already know we're comfortable with our growth projections, and we're comfortable with, the number of square footage we're projecting and that sort of thing. So
no,
my recommendation is we move forward.
I understand that, but I've heard some concerns, particularly about, how park fees are allocated. Do businesses really use parks that much? Now, because my understanding is once this is set, and if we're concerned that, wow, retail's way high, we can't compete anymore, we can say, as a council, let's not charge 100%, but the shortfall has to come out of the general fund or some other source. So this, and I also thought that this was something, once it was approved under the state statute, that we couldn't go back and amend it. But even so, I guess my question is, when by state law do we actually have to have this approved? How much time do we have? What's the leeway we have here?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, just want to take a step back. So I actually reached out to Mr. Bice and spoke to one of our town attorneys because there seemed to be some concerns about a particular fee. And so I asked, because this is also a little new to myself, and they assured me that, again, we're just approving the LUA, the IAP, and if we wanted to change something as we go through the process in April and May, We can absolutely do that. If, per state statute, if council denies or continues, what happens is some of the clock then starts over. We're going to have to wait 30 days, then we're going to have to wait another 60 days, and that's just the per the state statute. But we can make modifications. I also want to make note, on January 8th, Mr. Bice said, you know, yeah, we're having to show some of these development impact fees, but he already started looking at and showing staff that he needs to apply certain credits. So in almost all of the categories, we're going to see some decreases. So again, this is not set in stone, and there will still be an opportunity for council as well as our stakeholders.
But what timeline do we have to work with in case, because I'm starting to get a little uncomfortable with maybe approving it tonight based on some of the comments I've heard and concerns. So when by law would we need to actually have our impact fees? And I know there's several approvals that we have to do, but what's our hard schedule on it?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, we're required to review this every 5 years. We are in year six. And that's because we intentionally paused last year to see if the state land was going to be something we would want to include in the development fee process. But this process, we hired Tischler Bice, I believe, last summer. Is that correct? Yeah.
I think a little bit longer than that. We're on our 13th month.
We're on our 13th month. So this has been a very extensive process. And I don't think you're going to see much change in terms of what's going to be in this document, in this these projections of the growth and the infrastructure and that sort of thing, and the number of trips generated by retail are still the number of trips generated by retail for transportation. And again, yes, there are some individuals who believe that non-residential should not be charged the recreational fee or their proportionate share of recreational fee. However, the interpretation of our consultant is that the state law makes it very clear that, in fact, they do. And that we are one of only a couple of communities across the state that has not included recreation fee across the board in residential and non-residential. I would not be doing you justice if I brought you forward something that I felt we would be challenged at. And so I think it's a correction we need to make. And from here on out, then we won't see those kinds of major adjustments as we do updates. So it's a little bit of a reset for a particular category to make sure that office space and non-retail is not paying more than their fair share than the areas that are really generating. And I do understand, and I agree, that we are not trying to disincentivize retail development here in our community. That is not what we are trying to do at all. We are in the process of getting proposals for a retail analysis from a national firm that will help us identify those retailers that would be a good fit for Oro Valley so we can be more proactive in getting them here. But the bottom line is that in today's market, a retailer is looking at whether or not they're going to make money here, and that's an ongoing basis, and those are market-driven issues, and one-time costs are a very, very tiny part of their final decision on whether or not they are going to locate in a particular community. It's going to be, are there people who are going to buy from them, and is it worth their overall investment? And the impact fee portion of it is going to be very small. And as Ms. Jacobs indicated, there are specific credits that we have to do in the calculation. So what you are approving this evening is the methodology, not the fees. The fees are coming up, and there will be more opportunity for public input in the fees, and then we can work with council on addressing the concerns that you have at that time.
And I understand that this really does set the base of fees, but, Melanie, you're the first one who had brought this up. I made the motion. I mean, if you'd like to delay it, I'd be happy to withdraw my motion. If I don't know how comfortable the council is approving tonight or delaying, more than open.
I think that I got my questions answered. Thank you to the staff. I feel like this has been a long process, and we should probably move forward with it to keep the timeline going. You know, that number does jump out at me, and something that I feel like the whole council is trying to bring in, retail and commercial. And so, but I understand that there are certain requirements by state law that we're working in, and it sounds like maybe we've been undercharging for the past 5 years, and so we have a correction to make there. So anyway, I'll be interested to look as we move forward what else we can do.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to just...
Okay, Councilmember Pena.
Ms. Jacobs, as I'm listening to all this conversation, it almost appears to me that I understand this is the foundation, this is the beginning of this, but it almost appears that this foundation aligns with what the fee structure is. And while I've heard that, yes, council can have discretion, they can decide if they want to change some of this up, but how much of that can really be, I really want to understand how much of that can really be changed up, because it really does appear that this aligns with that pricing structure. So how much room is there?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, there's always room for adjustment to the fees. But, you know, once again, this is absolutely, you are correct. This is the foundation by which the fees will be calculated. And those final fees have not been prepared. The credits haven't been made in terms of offsets. There's credits on what people, you know, pay in taxes, and that's, there's mandatory credits that have to be offered. And so we haven't seen those final calculations yet, because it's sort of like putting the cart before the horse. First, we got to have the foundation, and then we have to move it forward.
Okay, I just want to understand, because it's got a little cloudy there. So okay,
trust
thank
me,
you.
13 months of this, it's very cloudy.
No, well, and you deal with it, and I certainly don't deal with it on a daily basis. But I just want to understand that this really is the foundation, and it does pretty much align with this pricing that's been put forward. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there like it is. Fair statement?
Yes.
Okay.
Fair statement.
Thank you.
Just a question. We certainly in the study session reviewed these non-residential assumptions, but maybe it wasn't communicated in that it represented a 48% increase. That seems to have caught, I think, most of the council off guard here when we received this new. So I think that data was there. It just wasn't voiced in that particular way. So I think naturally we're reacting to that. The other, you mentioned, Ms. Jacobs, that you know, we had the comparative chart, and I realize that it has some, you know, it's not necessarily apples and oranges for the single-family residences. We didn't have for the non-residential. I just want to make sure that I understand that we are going to have a comparative chart of non-residentials to kind of get a sense. I mean, I think it is helpful, especially for comparing us with Tucson, Marana, to see if we're in the ballpark versus, yeah.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, we will do that. What we may find, and we'll dig into this, is that some communities have a lot more categories in which they make. So, for example, they might have retail in a category of, you know, 0 to 5,000 square feet and 5,100 to this. You know, we're lumping it into a single retail category, but we'll provide all of that information, and at least for the ones we can get that data from. And yes, sir, we'll follow up with that.
Okay, thank you. So the motion on the table is to approve resolution number R20-08, adopting the 2019 to 2029 land use assumptions and infrastructure improvement plans for the town of Oro Valley, dated December 19th, 2019. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We'll go to item 3.
Discussion and possible action on resolution number R20-09, providing notice of intent to increase certain development impact fees for the town of Oro Valley.
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Although council needs to take some action, I would call this more administrative in nature. So again, per state statute, we need to provide notice. So notice on our website, notice in the newspaper, that the council may consider increasing our impact fees. This motion, and if you do approve, does not mean that you are. It's just, again, a notice per that state statute of giving the 60 days. And we're hoping you'll support the motion.
Okay, so similar to the others, entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'll make the motion. Help me make sure I'm making the right one this time. All right, I move to approve resolution number R20-09, providing notice of intent to increase certain development impact fees for the town of Oro Valley.
Second.
Okay, second. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We'll go to item four.
Discussion and possible action regarding a memorandum of understanding with HSL regarding town golf.
So Mr. Cohen, yes, Ms. Jacobs.
Mr. Mayor, I'd be happy to do a brief summary, and then if
please.
There are any questions that... Yeah. Mayor and Council, what's before you this evening is a memorandum of understanding with HSL El Conquistador Golf LLC. This is the entity in which the town entered into its purchase and sales agreement. The purpose of this memorandum of understanding is to simply outline several provisions that will require some subsequent follow-up, but by which both parties have agreed to include in the future. And namely, they are that it clarifies the HSL's understanding and our interpretation of the golf courses specifically that would be applied to the potential instance of a discontinued golf facility, and clarifies that for the 18-hole course is the La Cañada course and then the 9-hole resort course. It also asserts the town's exercising its ability to officially discontinue the Push Ridge course, and for HSL to enter into a lease option, again, per the purchase and sales agreement, effective October 1st, and that will eventually result in a lease agreement, which will come back before you in the future. It also includes a commitment on the part of the town to provide an option for HSL to potentially utilize the town's golf operator by specifying that we would request proposals to include the Push Ridge course costs, and those would then be solely paid for by HSL, which we have, and that is included in the current request for proposal that is on the street. And then finally, it includes a provision that indicates that HSL is willing to broaden its definition that's currently in the purchase and sales agreement regarding a qualified replacement manager to something a little more broad than what is specifically defined in the agreement, which again would come back to you with that final language in the future. So this is again the let's say 15,000 to 20,000 foot level. And this is ready for the council's discussion and action this evening. And I'm sure that the town attorney would be happy to jump in with any further clarification if needed.
So could you just, because this is open for discussion and possible action, Mr. Cohen, can you maybe provide some legal guidance to the council in terms of the parameters of that discussion, if any?
I'm not sure what you mean by parameters of the discussion.
Well, it's just that we've had discussions in executive session, And that's what I'm referring to.
That's right. When it, I think this body, I know this body, and I think some of the members of the public sitting out here tonight have heard me discuss the legislature's rationale for executive sessions. And right or wrong, there are, you know, certain legal reasons by which one is allowed to have executive session. One is to negotiate contracts. You know, this is no surprise that this document is the outgrowth of discussions in general that we've had, which I can't discuss in any with any specificity, but as a result of negotiations by myself and Ms. Jacobs with HSL, these were agreements that were reached, and they provide, you know, the towns with some benefit. For example, the current sales agreement would give HSL a year once the town were to declare a course, in this case the resort course, a discontinued facility. So we would kind of be in limbo for a year, not knowing what they're going to do. Well, HSL is telling us right now that they're going to lease that course, and it'll be effective October 1. So that's done. That's been negotiated. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if the document in your packet is the signed version. Mm-hmm. Good. They've signed it. So that's probably the biggest benefit here. Another one is, you know, this broadening of the definition of the operator. It gives you all more flexibility in choosing an operator, which is, you know, that's coming up for discussion here pretty soon because there's an RFP out for a golf operator. So that gives you more flexibility. That's another benefit to the town. So that's a benefit to the town. HSL not waiting up to a year to exercise its lease option on the course. That's a benefit. When you read the thick purchase agreement for the golf course and all of the related documents, there was actually an ambiguity in the documents as to whether or not the lease option applied to the resort course. We've cleaned that up, and they've agreed that that lease option exists on the resort course. That's a benefit to the town. And then lastly, and this is the third paragraph, this issue of this RFP that we have out right now, we've asked the people that bid on the opportunity to operate the town courses to look at the resort course too, because HSL may choose or may not choose to have that same operator operate the course that they're leasing, which would provide them some economies of scale. But it's up to them. So the bottom line is, from my perspective, and I think from the town manager's perspective, and she can disagree if I misstated, this is a win for the city. And it came after a lot of work, mostly by your manager, to negotiate this deal. So it's a good deal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Sure.
I move that we authorize Mary Jacobs to execute the Memorandum of Understanding between the Town of Oro Valley and HSL in tonight's packet.
I'll second.
Discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Pena?
I have a question for probably Mr. Arts or Ms. Jacobs, Mary Jacobs. So with this lease going into place, what is the anticipated impact for the town with the lease now, because we've been working on this for quite some time and we've been carrying that cost? So what is that going to mean now going forward?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, there are some very specific provisions in the purchase and sales agreement that we will have to agree to in terms of the what we get for the lease rate and that sort of thing. Okay. But what it does is it frees up the investment that the town has been making, the subsidy that the town has been making in the push course, and it turns over the full operation of that course in the manner in which HSL would like to operate that course. And potentially, if HSL agrees to partner with us on our operator, could provide us with some economies of scale in the golf operator as well. So overall, we expect that this will reflect, and we had estimated about a $200,000 subsidy to the town to operate the push course. So if we said, you know, well, this is October 1, that would be probably a minimum of $150,000, maybe a little bit more. And that's a very positive thing for us.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
I'm just pleased that we're able to bring this document in its completed form forward and have this public discussion. And I hope people understand that these things don't come from nowhere and that it's required quite a bit of work, especially on the part of our staff. And I want to express my appreciation to you as well. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Item 5.
Possible approval of any items discussed in executive session.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion. I move that Chief Sharp's annual performance review be deemed outstanding.
Second.
Any discussion? No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any future agenda items? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.